packed up my bag. I rent my house out to these guys on Craigslist, like, this is going to go well. First time having tenants. Their first month's rent check, even to move in, bounced. And it was my first time having tenants. So I believed their sad story about their sick daughter. They didn't even have a daughter. And I get fired within 60 days because he's like, nobody's buying any courses right now. I can't even afford your little $2,000 a month salary. But the day I got fired, he was putting on a conference and there was these two dudes up front talking about how they were flipping all these houses. And I went up to them and I said, can I work for you for free? And I didn't know how I was going to pay my bills and I didn't know where I was going to live. So I just moved into my car that day and I got to work for them for free. And so for the next 9 months on and off, I was living in my car. And it wasn't in there very long every day because we worked 18 to 21 hours a day. Learning how to be real estate investors and flip houses and new construction in the worst economy in real estate in the history of mankind.
Hey guys, welcome back to this week's edition of Game of Crimes with Murph in the Morning. Folks, thank you so much for coming back every week. I couldn't do any of this without you. I appreciate your support. If you haven't seen us on YouTube yet, do me a favor, go over there, type in Game of Crimes podcast in the search bar, hit the subscribe button, watch some episodes, hit the like button, and send me your comments. Good comments only, please. No, you send me your comments. That's good. But I am honored to have a special guest. And I kind of say that every week. But today's is a little bit different. If you've been watching Game of Crimes for quite some time, you remember I had a husband-wife back-to-back episodes with Seth and Jenna Griffith some time ago. That was actually episodes 144 and 145 in May of 2024. During that time, we learned about where they're working and what they're doing to help their fellow man. And so that's kind of led to last week's guest, who was Jeremy Locke. And if you remember, he's associated with Area Recovery. But now you heard about all the great things they're doing. Well, we brought in Jeremy's boss. And let me tell you what, she is a breaker. And you know what I'm talking about. So this lady, let me just describe her before I introduce you to her, because I know you guys can't see her yet. She's a true entrepreneur. She's a humanitarian. She's a philanthropist. And believe me, I had to work on saying that word. Her company is called Ariel. It's been described as a social enterprise company that provides real estate development, media production, education, motivational speaking, disaster relief, nation development, and other nonprofit work. You ever heard me say about that about anybody else that's been on this show? No, you haven't. And in 2016, Ariel was listed by Forbes and Fortune as the sixth fastest growing woman-owned, woman-led company in the world. So I just told you it's Jeremy's boss. So you kind of figured out who this woman is, right? That same year, Fortune also listed Ariel as the third fastest growing inner city company in the entire United States. Just wait till you hear. I mean, we're talking about a real entrepreneur here because this is a young lady. When I say young lady, this is a young lady. She's younger than my children. But the things that she's doing is just phenomenal. And on top of everything else, she's a former Miss North Carolina. Oh, my gosh. So let me quit beating around the bush here. Brittany Turner, welcome to Game of Crimes, lady. So I'm just over the hill to have you on the show.
I love your introduction. Thank you.
Well, I hope you love me at the end of the show here. We'll see how this all goes today. So just to tell you guys how I met Brittany here, I already mentioned Seth and Jenna and then through Jeremy. And Jeremy was very open and honest with us and talked about how their marriage came about. We're going to find out if that's really what, you know, if that's what she says about him or did he make all that crap up? We'll get the true story today, though. But Brittany, what I'd like to do is let's just start out with your background. Tell us about where you grew up, what your family dynamics were, your brothers and sisters and mom and dad, and just what your interests were back then.
Oh, man. I grew up in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina, in a little town called Edgefield. And we have to say North Augusta because nobody knows where Edgefield is. And grew up on that farm and worked every single day of my life really hard. And we had a tornado hit our house, which was really a game changer kind of in that part of our life. And we spent years cleaning up after that. We were all homeschooled, but so much of our life was cleaning up after that storm. And that storm really changed my perspective in seeing how many people did show up the day after and what that meant to us. But then on day five, there was nobody left and we were left to pick up the pieces. And I think that was the beginning of the disaster relief seed planted in my heart to really want to help nations rebuild to be stronger on the other side of a disaster versus taken to their knees and devastation, desperation, and hopelessness taking over. So I grew up there. I really had a wonderful family. And then I ended up going to a survival school at 17 years old. And I went with the mission of learning how to rescue kids. Now, they didn't specifically teach that, but my grandma came down to our little homeschooled family of six. We were super sheltered and showed us a video when I was 12 years old. And it was about human trafficking. And that opening scene of this movie, and I don't even know the name of this movie, I need to look it up, was this little 8-year-old girl in like the back of a cab being taken to the creepiest motel in the world. And this guy that is the most disgusting, you know, nasty man in the world is waiting inside to rape her. And then there's an exchange of money. And then you see her turn to the door, like with begging eyes, please, please take me with you. And then the door slams in her face. And then the movie ends with her and 50 other little girls all beat up in a container ship to be sold overseas. And they all die. Like that was the movie. And so I really feel like I woke up at 12 to realizing how blessed I was that that was not my story. Now, we were not a rich family or, you know, there was all kinds of different struggles growing up, but it was not one where I was being sold and hurt in that way. And I raised my hand and said, God, please use me. I can't live in a world where I do nothing about it. And so that became my identity from 12 on. I worked 5 jobs at a time all throughout high school to be able to go on these mission trips overseas. And I thought it would be this like beautiful, you know, Mother Teresa moment where I'm in my long skirt and I'm holding the child and the flies and like, it's just, but every time I went on these mission trips with like a specific mission, I became more and more angry. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm the worst missionary because I am just angry. And I was angry because we'd go there for a specific mission, but then we'd find 50 more. You know, you want to help with a school and yet you meet children that are starving. Or you're in Africa and you're trying to share the gospel with them. You meet all these girls that had just been circumcised and they're dying of infection. And in the, you know, middle of nowhere, Kenya, just so many needs that many times we've already solved as humanity. And so I was angry when I was over there. And then I was angry when I came back because I found the people who had the opportunity to be the problem solvers were throwing their lives away, depressed, just TikToking, drinking, cheating, like manufacturing problems just to have something to fight for in their life when they had so much access to abundance if they just tried. They had so much purpose they were called to live in. Therefore, because they weren't living in it, they were depressed and throwing themselves away. And so I started asking the question, like, how could one of the most abundant nations in the world be so depressed? And again, my guess is that we're not walking in our calling. We're not being a force for good. Because my best guess for why we're here on this planet is to expand God's love. And I think that one of the best ways that we can feel that and do that is to help end suffering. And so if we're not helping others, in some way, shape, or form, we're not going to feel fulfilled. And so again, everybody's got their own calling. And I don't believe that one calling is higher than another. Your calling could be being a stay-at-home mom or dad, and that's not less important than choosing to fight against human trafficking in any way, shape, or form. So you got to be confident in what that calling is and in that season. But we're not called to live depressed. We're not called to be throwing our lives away or drifting in our one chance on earth. So I got frustrated, and I'm not saying I lived this angry, bitter, hateful life, but that frustration was born because there's a missed expectation. I'm seeing the need, I'm seeing the solution, and I'm seeing the pain on both sides. And so I ended up going to this school in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina area. And it was honestly a miracle how I even ended up finding it, but it was a leadership school. And they taught us on the side, they have an optional survival school to go through. And there was a Green Beret named Gavin. And the minute I met Gavin, I was like immediately in love with him because he was so talented. I was like, oh my gosh, a real man with real skills. He didn't even look at me because he was just, you know, our leader, but I just admired this man. Right. First and only real military person I ever spent time with. And I was like, wow, you know so many things. It's so interesting. And so Gavin taught our team how to be these hardcore missionaries. And the goal was to learn how to survive anything so you could stay on track with the mission. And I had no idea at that point what important business training that would be. So, they put us through hell every single week. And at the end of that year, they did a culmination exercise. And that culmination exercise was in Costa Rica. They dropped us off like 8 hours away from normal civilization and said, find a way to create value for this village. And so, we put on a little women's conference, and I remember at the end of the conference, we got to ask each person if we could pray for them and talk to them. And then a very, very last little girl, she was like 6 or 7. I asked her her name and she didn't answer. So I was kind of awkward. And I asked the translator, I said, hey, what's her name? And she said, well, she can't speak. I said, what happened? I found out that she was sexually abused as a child. And she was so horrifically sexually abused as an infant that her vocal cords were destroyed.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, looking into this little girl's eyes, I was so just devastated. And then I was even more upset when I found out that the person who did this to her was her father, and that it was socially acceptable in this area for this to happen, and that 1 out of every 4 babies actually died from sexual abuse from their father before they turn 1.
1 in 4.
1 in 4. And then if they live past that, then they like pass kids around at the bar and like just really, really unhealthy social acceptance of sexual abuse.
Unbelievable.
Now, Steve, I wish I could tell you that this is the one place in the whole world that this happens, but sadly now it's so much more common than you'd ever know. And so I went back to my tent that night with just a completely broken heart and raged all the feelings. And I remember it was pouring down rain, and I got on my knees in my tent and I said, God, whatever it looks like, please use me to help stop this from happening. And I heard loud and clear. I thought about everything that I'd ever dreamed of as like a middle-class American, like the house, the fence, the little family, the vacations, the games, like all the things that I thought would just be a normal life. And I remember thinking, I don't care about any of that. Nothing matters to me more than wanting to help make this situation never happen again and to be able to help get redemption for this little girl. And I heard God say loud and clear, I'm going to take you out of the mission field and I'm going to put you in business. And I was like, No, anything but that. Just like, I always miss like survival school, G.I. Jane, like Tomb Raider look. I just did not resonate with the shoulder pads and the the suit and Wall Street. I just had the worst image of business women at the time. And so I was like, oh, immediately, as soon as God audibly talks to me, I'm like, no. So anyway, glad he doesn't smite us immediately.
Yeah, that didn't work too good.
I know. But I'm on my way back from Costa Rica like a week later. And I remember trying to think, okay, did God really say that? And I remember thinking, I have less than $20 in my bank account. I probably need a little more than that to put a dent in this darkness. And so I was like, okay, God, whatever. But I still had been trained in my little culture I grew up in South Carolina, that being rich was bad. I really thought rich people were evil. And it may have been in Disney's influence where every rich person was the bad guy, or, you know, certain scriptures or what they talked about in our church. But I just had it in my head that all rich people were bad. And so I had this little bit of self-sabotage going on, to say the least, even in the pursuit of listening to that order from God. So two things happened. When we got back from Costa Rica, about a week later, I get a phone call. They said, did you hear what happened to Gavin? I said, no. They said, he just walked in the woods and shot himself. And I was like, no. I mean, how could someone with that amount of talent, that amount of strength, that beautiful man that has so many skills, was funny, how could he not see how much the world needed him? And I thought, what a waste for humanity that we lost him. And then I immediately thought, he must be the only veteran to have ever had this thought. Because I just had never been around them. But it was just did not make any sense that someone like him would do something like that. This does not compute. Right. And that stuck with me throughout the rest of my life. But that's, I've just still had never spent any time with military. And so flash forward, I'm going back to class, and this is a leadership school. They had a guy come in that was some millionaire. And because I'm a really good student, I skipped class.
You skipped class?
I skipped class. I didn't want to hear what he had to say. It doesn't have anything to do with me. I'm going to call your mother. Yeah, I know. But like a really good student, I didn't realize he was teaching for multiple days. So I ended up in his class anyway. Yep. And I sat in the very back, and I'm like mapping out how you'd like create this amazing training base to create these hardcore missionaries, still ignoring what God had told me. But he finally asked a question that I cared about, and he said, who in here has gone on a mission trip? And I was like, me.
Yeah.
I've done God's work, you know.
A halo came over your head, glowing light in the background.
Yes. And he said, who in here has had to raise money for that mission trip? And I was like, also me. I've done that. He said, well, did you know that you can buy a house with no money down? And if your mortgage payment is $900 a month and you rent that thing out for $1,200 a month, that $300 is a thing called cash flow. And I was like, go on. Yeah. And he said, do that 10 times. You can live in Africa and you don't have to ask anybody for money. And so I was like, this is amazing. This is profound. And so at 18, I went to one of my other special forces leaders. That's the name of that survival school. And they said, well, how do you buy a house? And he talked for like 3 hours about adjustable rate mortgages. And I finally just wrote the note like, note to self, don't buy a house. It's too complicated. But I ended up having to make a decision in a week. Do I join the Army? I'd met with the recruiter 4 times, or do I buy this house? This big pivotal moment in my life, because I always really resonated with just that military world after I was introduced to it. And I ended up buying that house. And in the process of buying it, I heard about this thing called flipping houses. I'd never heard of before. You know, we didn't have TV growing up, and I think it was kind of a new concept back then. But you buy a crappy house, cool, put a lot of work into it. I'm a hard worker, and you can make $10,000 once you fix it up. And I was like, this is madness money. This is insane. And I had this flash forward of, you know, having some compound in Haiti and rescuing some kid off the streets and bringing it back and like trying to buy the medicine for it. But the donor hadn't sent their money for the month because they were out yachting. They were late. And then the kid dies. This is a dream. And And I literally said, you know, screw that. I'm going to make my own money so nobody can ever cut me off. And I want your listeners to hear that. This is a little 18-year-old Brittany realizing that we have access in a way so many other countries don't, to be able to create wealth and abundance, to live in an overflow state, to be God's hands and feet. Because now that I have a nonprofit, I realize it's a lot more helpful to have more people's money go towards things. But if it came down to it and we got cut off, we could still continue this work just with what I've been able to create. And so for your notes, listeners, may no one ever be able to cap your calling or cut you off. Because if you're listening to this, you are more than capable and able to be able to create a life of abundance, to be able to overflow, be a blessing in the lives of people who really need it. And so that was where I dug my feet in and said, I guess I'm going to learn how to flip houses. And so I bought this house at a really good time. So the very end of 2007, when I decided to let go of all my other scholarships and go all in on real estate investing. I don't know if you remember what happened in 2008, Steve.
I do. Unfortunately, I do.
Oh, man. So I tell my family I'm not going to college. And this was before that was okay. And so let them know I'm not going to college because I studied for weeks and researched for weeks and tried to find any college that taught you how to be a real estate investor. And they don't teach you. So I figured, why do something if they don't teach you what you need to learn? I got to find another way to learn. This is the homeschooler in me. Got to teach yourself. And so I start calling the We Buy Houses signs, like, how can I work for you for free so I can learn the business? And they're like, get out of the market now. And I'm like, why? Like, they didn't tell me. They just hung up. And I didn't know, because I don't watch TV, that there is a global economic meltdown going on. I just thought I was a failure for about 3 years. So everything I touched failed. Everything. I mean, trying to be a loan officer, trying to just help people get out of debt. It was just in the pursuit of learning how to be a dang house flipper, nothing worked. So I ended up working at the Cheesecake Factory just to pay the minimums on my credit cards and be able to survive, because waiting on loans to close and get a commission as a loan officer was like, not one loan closed that whole year. It was just terrible. Jeez. So I'm surviving on this. And I remember one night at the end of a double shift where I needed to make $350 in order to make the minimum on my mortgage payment, because I have this house now. And I said, God, I give you all the glory. You're going to show up for me. I had made $7 in a 9-hour shift. Like, it was the worst shift of all time. And I was like, I just got up to a table and they left me a nickel. I'm like, who even has these? Why did you leave anything? And I threw my hands up there and I said, God, why am I here? I'm smarter than this, because I had been studying every real estate book I could get my hands on 12 hours a day. And God said, because I want to bless you. And I was like, really?
When?
Holding my nickel. Yeah, like, really, God? And so that's when I had thrown my hands on my apron. And I just, the whole thing just full of these real estate investing books. And I knew it all. I just didn't have access to an opportunity. And so right as he said that, I went over to the host and I said, please send me home. And he argued with me for a minute. And he said, I can go right when these two guys and a girl walked in. And I said, please give me that table. Argued with him some further. I said, I don't care if I'm here for 5 more hours and I just make $5. I need that table. And so he did give it to me. And I was present enough. I didn't get lost in my own sob story. I was present enough to see on the guy sitting farthest away from me in the booth, wedding ring finger, it had the logo of a house. And it said the Millionaires Club on the side. And I said, are you real estate investors? And he said, why, yes, we are. I said, I'm going to be a real estate investor someday. And he's like, okay, sweetie, you probably read Cosmo Girl magazine. And I said, actually, I read the Success magazine. And he said, oh, well, you're probably listening to Hanson on CD in your car. Y'all remember Hanson?
No.
Bop. Okay. Well, somebody listening to this is going to remember Hanson. And I said, actually, I'm listening to Think and Grow Rich, the audiobook. And so he kept challenging me with what I now realize are pretty sexist questions, but it didn't bother me at the time. I just wanted to be in the room with people who were doing what I wanted to learn, because this little girl haunted me. haunted me. I wanted to quit a million times and just go live a basic life, but I knew I had to find a way to get past myself and my problems to be able to make a difference for her. Every time I closed my eyes and wanted to quit, which was hourly, I saw her eyes. And the brokenness in her eyes, knowing that she was just somebody's sex object. She was not loved. She was not protected. She had so much unworthiness and guilt and shame planted in her soul by something she couldn't control. And I knew if all I did in my whole life was help her, it would be a worthy life. And so I kept going. Anyway, after asking me these questions, they said, well, we put on conferences for people to learn real estate investing, and we'd love to have you out. And so I went out there. I honestly really kind of got invited just because I was Miss North Carolina at the time, but that is its own side story. And so I went out there as like a celebrity type person. And I found a way to serve. I'm trying not to tell the longest story in the whole world, but it's just a crazy chain of events, of miracles and being present and asking for that breakthrough, even when I'm feeling really down. I'm in a room full of people spending $75,000 on watches, and I, you know, didn't have money to fill up my car. And when I say give first, find a way to be a blessing, even if you're in survival mode. How can you be a blessing to others? And it will come back to you, probably not through the people you're even taking the time to bless, but giving first. So I knew there was power in proximity as well. And so I asked one of the speakers, like, can I take you to lunch? I just want to ask you some questions about real estate investing. Well, this person, and I was like, I'll buy. They invited 12 people. And oh, I remember like, oh my gosh, the minimum, like I only had $100 left on my credit card. So I'm trying not to stress out the whole time that I'm buying this lunch, and happened to be present enough to hear the guy at the end of the table say, I've got all these deals stacking up on my desk. If only I had someone I could teach how to be a real estate investor and project manager, I could be selling my courses all over the world. This is like what I need an assistant for. And I was like, I'll be your assistant. And through a long story, I ended up working for him. He said, well, you got to move this place called Nashville in 2 weeks. So that's how I ended up in Nashville. I took a job that was $600 less than the minimums on my credit cards. And like just the payment, packed up my bag. I rent my house out to these guys on Craigslist. Like, this is going to go well. Mm-hmm. Never first time having tenants. And, well, their first month's rent check, even to move in, bounced. And it was my first time having tenants. So I believed their sad story about their sick daughter. They didn't even have a daughter. And, I get fired within 60 days because he's like, nobody's buying any courses right now. I can't even afford your little $2,000 a month salary. But the day I got fired, he was putting on a conference, and there was these two dudes up front talking about how they were flipping all these houses. And I went up to them and I said, can I work for you for free? And I didn't know how I was going to pay my bills, and I didn't know where I was going to live. So I just moved into my car that day, and I got to work for them for free. And so for the next 9 months on and off, I was living in my car. And I wasn't in there very long every day because we worked 18 to 21 hours a day. Learning how to be real estate investors and flip houses and new construction in the worst economy in real estate in the history of mankind. Yep. And so I learned how to work, and I was powered by that bigger purpose, which is why everything is called Aerial Something. I did copy the brand infrastructure Virgin, because they have like 400 different companies underneath the Virgin name. And I thought that was so cool to have your values and you put it into an organization and you can scale it across different industries. And so that's why it's Aerial, all these different companies. I don't have one company that does all the things that you said earlier, but I do have a series of organizations changing the world, all in their own way as a force for good. So anyway, I worked for these guys. And then after 9 months, I said, you are ready to do this on your own, and had a bunch of crazy projects, really difficult things, from robberies to floods, fires, like you name it. But I was out on my own making this happen as a 21-year-old girl in the South in construction. And within that next 2-3 years, I became a DECA multimillionaire. And then 6 years later is when I started winning the bigger awards. And I'm very, very honored to have won so many awards that I was not even picking them up. that made my mom go pick them up half the time. And people are like, why are you not just so proud of this and that and that? I was like, this is not my identity. I'm grateful, but I have to get back to this little girl. And so I honestly was mad at God that I was on that journey. I was mad for a long time. Like, why would you give me such a big heart to be rescuing kids? And I'm out here managing contractors, picking out carpet and dealing with people who are upset about the tile being the wrong way. Like, when I had such a big picture on really emergency problems, such a heart and learning skills on how to really deal with it, that was super frustrating to me. And I think my advice to our listeners would be, you know, if you are being divinely guided, like, trust that you're being qualified, even if you don't understand. Like, never curse the past or the path, because you don't know how he would use these skills for child rescue. Like, what the heck does real estate development have to do with that? I couldn't put it together, but that is the point of having an aerial perspective, is we're right. not going to know, but there is one that does know.
You may want to pray for patience to go along with that, because that's not one of my virtues.
It's not one of mine either. I stopped praying for it because every time I did, everything went wrong. So I was like,
Got it.
Okay. I'm just going to get through it. So I'm doing all these projects again, became the biggest rehabber in Nashville over those next couple of years, which was amazing because it was almost impossible to get lenders to believe that this little chick could do what I was doing. But I had to share with media, like, what was in my head on how we were doing these things. So I ended up going back and forth to Africa with my mentor and really seeing and meeting families that were selling their kids into trafficking, like these little two-year-olds for $25, and learning, how do you create a better economy to where when they run out of money, they don't have to sell themselves or a child. Like, we don't even realize how blessed we are just to be able to go into debt. Do you know what a blessing it is that we can go into debt? I know that sounds weird, but like, that itself is huge. Other places you go into debt, you die.
Yep.
It's over. And so I kept working, and I shifted my approach from just trying to make money so I'd have the abundance and the wealth and the influence to being able to do this stuff, to, after going back and forth to Africa, how do you really shift a nation by bringing in better opportunities than those of super impoverished regions and the desperation that they're facing? And so I started buying up the worst parts of town, Murder Acre, Stab City. Like, you wouldn't want to walk around there, but I've always had this really tough side of me that I can hang. And I lost my leadership team like three different times. They're like, this is not how you make money, Brittany. And I was like, well, we're not just trying to make money. We're trying to change the world. We have to stop kids from being trafficked. And they're like, you are crazy. And so
I would probably think the same thing.
Yeah, they didn't understand. I'm like, I'm not just working to work. I'm working to learn.
Yes.
And for the young people listening to this that are just starting out, I really highly recommend, find places that you can work to learn, not just to earn. Because me putting in that time for free for 9 months, that was, people always ask, like, you're not mad that you made them over $400,000 and they never paid you? I'm like, not at all. I would never be anywhere. They're the first people to believe in me ever. So anyway, I started seeing, how could I shift similar areas in my own backyard, similar being high crime, low opportunity, areas people didn't want to go to or believe in, low jobs, not great education, and again, high crime. And so those were the common denominator. How would I start practicing really revitalizing, mindfully revitalizing those areas to bring in opportunity and to raise those up? So I practiced that in my own backyard of America. So I started in Nashville, and I started going in the southern states of the United States. And I practiced on more and more complicated neighborhoods. Again, could not keep a leadership team because they just kept saying, you're insane. There's literally people stabbing each other in the parking lot right in front of us as we're going to assess the property, Brittany. And I was like, it's perfect. You know,
did you have the police with you?
No. And I don't even carry. I just was like, it's amazing. We can get this done. But I don't know if it's like faith or delusion, but they're in the same family. So I did it. I started revitalizing harder and harder areas so that I could eventually get back to Africa and make it to where parents aren't selling their kids. And so I finally got really good at it and started, again, winning all these awards, and all the land I bought up started being worth a lot more because of what I was able to envision and the amazing things I was able to bring to different communities. And there is a difference between gentrification and mindful revitalization. There's a big difference. I don't need to get into it for the haters. But you can spend some time thinking about that, people. And so I said, God, I have nailed it. There is not a place I can't turn around. Steve, I'm not good at many things. I'm good at like three things. I can change any area. I can see the highest and best in someone like instantly. Like, what's your highest and best calling? I can see it. And one karaoke song, you know, which is important. If you live in Nashville, you have to have a karaoke song up your sleeve or you're going to get kicked out.
Okay. What's your karaoke song?
I Will Always Love You by Whitney Houston.
We're not going to ask you to sing it, but maybe at the gala this year.
Yes. Well, it's better with one sponsored margarita. much better. But yes, those are my skills. And so I said, God, how do I go from doing this in my own backyard of America to Africa? And I heard him say loud and clear, start on islands. And I was like, what the heck does an island have to do with anything? And I didn't hear anything else. And so I started trying to put together the pieces of what I've learned in my life. Like, how would you get essentially the force for good? People like you and me, people that live around us, to wake up to how powerful they are, how called they are, and how important it is that they activate into their purpose. Like, how would you wake people up so that you can solve the problems on the planet? So that was my idea. And people are like, hey, that's not what people do on islands. And I was like, well, this one will, you know, whichever one I end up with will. And they're like, people go to do bad things on islands. And I was like, no, I knew they did. But that's, I knew you'd need a sacred oasis, but go ahead.
How old were you at this point?
27.
You're looking to buy an island. You know, most people are thinking, can I even save up enough money to go take a cruise to an island? Yeah. And you're looking to buy one.
I didn't do anything else but work 18 to 21 hours a day for all those years. I was very, very focused. And so the island story is its own insanely amazing, beautiful, God-ordained, miraculous thing. But because we only have so much time, you have to come to the island to hear it. It's not actually even public. But I was looking for islands off of Haiti, ended up in the British Virgin Islands, just trying to get it in my subconscious and like look at islands for sale. And then God said, you are supposed to buy this island. Again, you got to come to the island to hear the whole thing because it's crazy. Flash forward, get it under contract, start working on it. It takes a long time to really close on an island here in BVI. And
wow.
Yeah. In a 3-month period, the person I had like just married became really horribly abusive and then started canceling all of our dreams. And I believe he turned because I asked him to work and he just never wanted to work. And so that
How
was
could you?
Not as planned, but I'm not going to sit here and talk about him. But he tried to just start destroying everything in my life. And so one of those was canceling the contract on the island. And I had already put a couple million in. Which was not canceled the insurance, told the sellers we're not buying it anymore, tried to destroy my business, got everybody to quit. It was a really hard season to go through. And so in a 3-month period, the person I had essentially just ran down the aisle to marry, that was ending, canceled the contract on the island and the insurance. Then it gets hit within 3 weeks of that by the strongest hurricane in the history of the Atlantic, Hurricane Irma. At the time. And then 10 days later, it gets hit by Hurricane Maria, the second strongest hurricane to ever hit. Direct hits. And it looked like everything I'd ever worked for was gone. Not just in that island, but just with what he was doing. And on top of that, just a broken heart. And so that was a period of my life where I didn't want to live anymore. I had allowed somebody to become the voice in my head and to tell me my identity and to tell me my worth, which was nothing. And I lived in a condo downtown Nashville, and I remember going out to that balcony and standing on the ledge on the 14th floor and just looking down and hungering to jump. Just really hungering to end it all. And at this time, based on what I was being told by him, is that I ruin people's lives. Like, the world is better off without me in it. And I kind of lost faith in God, to say the least, because he tells me to buy this island just for it to get destroyed and to lose so much money and time and energy. And I'd spent 7 months renovating it and like letting the rest of my businesses not function the way they should because I was here. And I had one person I could call, one woman. And I don't even know why I felt safe enough to tell her what I was really thinking. And of course I coded it, but she started yelling at me and reminding me of who I am. And I'm very, very pro-marriage. We literally had Make Marriage Great Again hats. And she said, what does it mean to gain your marriage and lose your soul? What does love really look like? And again, still very, very pro-marriage, but I don't know why I'm sharing this in this interview for the first time in my life. But the point is, like, you're calling your worth. All of those are between you and God. No human being should ever have that place in your heart. There's somebody going to listen to this, supposed to hear this. And it's really important to know what love is and what love is not. Love is not words. It is pure actions. And you will know them by their fruits, not their fruits they talk about. Steve, I wish I could tell you I had only walked on the ledge of that balcony one time. But I went out there at least a dozen times. And I spent 90% of my day for that whole year planning my suicide. And so I do know what it feels like. And the thing that saved my life was when this place got hit by a hurricane, I knew I had to go down there and try to find my friends' bodies. So there's only like 15,000 people that were here at the time. And the British government brought 5,000 body bags because it looked that bad. Like, we thought everybody was dead. It was a total annihilation.
Wow.
Miraculously, that storm came during the day and people were able to move buildings and get to better cover during the eye of the storm. And there's a quote by the top people in leadership, and they said, had that storm come in the middle of the night, there wouldn't have been living to bury the dead.
Wow.
And so it really was a miracle that so few people did die. But I came back. I literally came in with the search and rescue crew because I'm a pushy person and I get stuff done. And I just went to Puerto Rico and I went airline to airline and said, who can take me? Who can take us? So I borrowed my brother-in-law and my little sister. And I said, we got to go find my friend's bodies. We have to help. And we took in a bunch of aid. And that was my first real disaster response. And flying in, I remember looking at everything and thinking, everything that made BVI so beautiful and that island so amazing looked like it had been set on fire. Because secretly, Steve, I guess I'm just constantly challenging God. Because the whole time I didn't feel worthy of owning something so nice. And I kept asking God, like, why BVI? It doesn't need any help. Like, maybe I can help its more poor areas or its kid or something. Like, why would you call me to BVI? I've wanted to go to Haiti. Thank God I didn't get called there long term, because that would be really hard to own an island right now there. I was looking for islands off of Haiti. And so that day flying in, I realized that God prepositions us to be a blessing. And it could be a year before. You don't know. The point is to stay present enough to hear that guidance and to trust when you don't see. And so I ended up starting a nonprofit back then. We called it Aerial Global Community because that was the best I had at my fingertips, was bringing in entrepreneurs to use their resources as a force for good and doing animal rescue and whatever I could to help rebuild this nation, and created a docuseries called BVI Stronger, which ended up raising tens of millions of dollars. It all went straight to the nonprofits that we featured because I didn't have the accounts set up and didn't want to take it, which is awesome. But in doing that docuseries, I learned, how do you help a nation truly recover? But the first thing, and one of the bigger things I noticed, if I can be truly honest with you, was when I landed and I was like walking around, and, you know, over the next couple months and weeks and months, I saw all these different nonprofits come in and out. And I was like, man, at the time, everybody sucks at this. I was like, they're not actually getting anybody any help. And like, I'm obviously a very pushy person. It was just like, people are starving and you're just walking around, you're taking more than you're giving. And like this frustration in me. And I had this original gangster thought that was, we need a team of rednecks, like a whole army of them. And we could turn this country around in like a week. Like, that was my faith-filled
great
delusion.
Choice of words.
Right. You know, I mean, I'm from South Carolina. I mean, Cajun Navy went and did that. But, you know, like the point is, which I love, got to help this country rebuild, ended up getting the island back and working on rebuilding it. And not only, again, the whole story is so cool and just how God brought that to life, but not only being able to bless the nation for that whole year that I didn't even have the island, but being able to bless the nation in bringing it to life and everything. I was super intentional. And then now what it does every day is incredible. But flash forwards, unless you have any questions, I keep talking.
I do.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I want to back way up to where your first mission trip to Costa Rica in 2007?
My very, very first mission trip was when I was like 13. Okay. I went to Jamaica. I'd gone to a bunch of different countries before that, but Costa Rica was one that was the culmination exercise of our survival school.
So you mentioned going to Africa, and I've never been there. I've been to Jamaica. I've been all to most of the Caribbean islands. What was your first impression of what you saw? Was it similar to what you had in South Carolina?
In Africa?
Mm-hmm.
No. You know, there are so many incredibly beautiful places in Africa, and I have been corrected to make sure I state that to people, because it's not this just impoverished pile of, you know, whatever you'd imagine from some of the things we've seen on TV. There really is some glorious, amazing places to go, and amazing animals and amazing people. But there are some really impoverished places with a lot of desperation, a lot of genocide, a lot of torture. Like there's places like that all over, but always felt very specifically called to Africa. I can't tell you why, because I forgot. It's just your calling is your own business, not mine to explain. And what was really eye-opening for me was, yes, we have problems in America, in our own backyard, and everywhere. You have to go where you're called, for one. And two, the types of problems were different. You know, I was not waking up going to high school and finding babies in trash cans on my way in the front doors. Like, that's not the types of problems that I had in high school. That was the problems that a lot of them were having in high school. Or if you had a child, you weren't allowed to go to college. Like there's just some really different sad things going on. And like I said, a lot of these problems have been solved, from lack of clean water to the fact that in America we've solved food in such a way that we have obesity as an issue. So there's just so much good that if we just expand that good, you can change so many people's lives.
And what you just made a statement, you've got to go where you're called, because I'm guilty of this as well. I'm thinking, we're helping all these people in foreign countries. Why aren't we helping people here in the United States? Well, first of all, go for our listeners. If you've never been outside the United States to a poverty stricken area, I tell you what, if I was king for a year here in the United States, I'd make a law that everybody had to go to a impoverished country and live for
that'd
a
be
year.
A good call.
Just to make you appreciate what you got here. We are so spoiled.
But
I used to think the same thing is why aren't we helping people here? Well, most people here have the capability of helping themselves if they'll just get off their lazy butts and do it. But I love the fact that you just said you've got to go where you feel like God is leading you to go.
Yes. And I wouldn't be telling, not that you're doing this, but some people are always like trying to say that, like, we have problems here. I was like, absolutely. But I've always felt very called to save lives and stop evil. And that's always been like in an emergency state type level problems, not we need more art in this high school. You know, like that would be considered a big problem for somebody. And that is really important if they feel called to do that. That's just not been mine. And if God leads me to Africa, it's my freaking business and my lifetime where I'm going to spend my time. If and when I'm in America, I'm going to be a massive blessing there because I want to choose to be a massive blessing everywhere I go. But just have confidence in what you feel led to do because there was a reason you came here and that your soul knows why and your desire means of the Father. And you're only going to be living in a different level of peace and joy when you're living in that calling. And if it's in Haiti, great. If it's in your PTA, great. Right. Like just do the thing. So let's stop telling each other what to do.
Well, and one thing I want to ask you about, you kind of skimmed over that Miss North Carolina thing. Why did you do that? And I mean, what was your talent? You know, I mean, what year was this?
There's three different pageant systems that are the big ones. There's actually a lot more than three. So there's Miss USA, there's Miss America and Miss United States. And USA is more like modeling. I'm summarizing. Don't hate me, ladies, if I'm not saying it perfectly. My goodness. USA is like modeling. People want to become actresses, like famous influencers now would be doing that one. That would be the biggest one. Miss America is the one with the talent. And Miss United States was the one with the cause. And obviously, I'm going to do the cause one. And so I grew up a super tomboy. You probably can't tell, but always into like rescue. The only thing I give a crap about as a child, I would rescue every animal ever. I brought them home every week. And my mom's like, no, but like I became a lifeguard the minute I could. I just cared about rescue, rescue, rescue. And so one day, I can't remember why or where I was. God said, you need to do this pageant. And I was like, no.
Ew, he's putting on a dress.
I was so turned off by it, but I had learned to listen to God. And so I did. And then I won. And that was around, I think it was 2008. Yeah. And so I did it. And I was like, this is weird. But my cause, instead of like breast cancer or animals, whatever, it was actually financial education, getting financial education into schools. And one of the cool things I learned was you can go anywhere with a crown. People let you in anywhere. And so I would be able to go into middle schools and high schools and teach them the same thing that that guy taught me in class, which was, did you know you can buy a house with no money down?
Wow.
And the concept of creating cash flow to fund your life calling. And so I would teach the rich dad, poor dad. We'd play the game cash flow and all kind of fun ways of teaching this. And I still have those sixth graders like reaching out to me now. They're like 30 probably now, but just telling me how that one time I came to their school changed their life. So that's why I did Miss North Carolina. It was a fun time and I did use the crown for good. And then I really think it was to meet those people at the Cheesecake Factory though. Because they ended up inviting me to that event as Miss North Carolina, my little banner and crown. I had to wear that every day to go for free. And I ended up meeting that person that led me to Nashville, that led me. Like, it's just this whole ripple effect. And so now I also know how to walk really well in shoes on stage picking up awards. Still got the walk.
Well, there are two things. One is my wife and I talk all the time about, why are we not teaching financial education in the school systems, which some of the schools are finally doing now? You know, I didn't know how to balance a checkbook when I came out. I didn't even know what a checkbook was. I thought if there's checks in the book, it meant you had money. But so that's the first thing. The second thing is, and I think you probably agree with this, and this is really for our listeners. We had a pre-call for yesterday for what, 15 minutes? So this is the first time we're really talking to each other. And I don't believe in luck and I don't believe in coincidence. I believe that everything's based on his plan. And even though we don't understand it while we're doing it, what the heck, what is this tomboy doing getting in a beauty pageant?
Right.
You know, it all worked out for your good and for his good, right? So it's all about walking in faith, people, if you hadn't picked that up yet. And
it is.
You're getting a churching today. You know, we're going to church today.
I don't have another way to tell the story. It might be churchy sounding, but I don't have, God has made sure I cannot take credit for this journey at all.
You start taking credit for it, things are probably going to change. You got to remember who gave you the ability to do what you do. Mm-hmm. You know, the earth was not created by a cloud of dust or a speck of dust or a cloud of gas, whatever. You know, my question when people approach me with that is, where did that speck of dust come from? Where'd the gas cloud come? How did that start?
Right. How did that start?
And all you have to do is see a beautiful sunrise or sunset. And you think that was just happened?
Right.
Okay. Let's get back to your story, because I'll be up on the pulpit here for a while. My dad was a Southern Baptist minister. So that's where it comes from. I think you told us you went to Nashville because that's where they offered you a position. Is that right?
Yes. They said, come to Nashville and I'll let you be my assistant and I'll teach you real estate investing. And then I got fired, you know, within 60 days. I didn't ever learn it from him, but I learned from somebody else. So, but go ahead.
I read an article about your very first house. I think it's the first house you flipped. Something bad happen 2 days before closing?
There's nothing bad that didn't happen to that one. My gosh, it was in a rough spot. And so the 2 days before closing, I'm like, I'm finally going to make some money. And I had a buyer and everything is all ready to go. House is done. And the front door gets kicked all the way in. The door frame is kicked in. And these robbers came in, stole the oven, drug it across the wood floors. And I'll just tell you the real story. You know, the haters are going to hate. They stole the oven. They cut all the copper wiring out of under the house and all this stuff. Just made all this damage. But they They left the refrigerator. And so I remember just being there, just crying like, this is delayed. And I was like broke as crap, just waiting for this thing to close. And there was a local crackhead that he was so out of it all the time, but I made friends with him and he was always asking for money and I would pay him if he'd clean up the little garbage in the yard and like give him a little work to do. But he came up to me and he goes, they're coming back tonight for the refrigerator. And I'm like, like hell they are. So I slept in that house with no door. It was during a blizzard. There's no heat because they cut all the wires out of the house. I slept in that house with guns and was willing to die for that $500 refrigerator. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be a rehabber in real estate, that is what it's going to take. Honestly, and it might take the essence of that, put it somewhere else, but that is the essence that's going to make it work for you or not, because it is not for the faint of heart, especially during a great recession. But the robbers did come back that night and I had set up this like booby trap I got from Home Depot and they, you know, were scared, went running off. And I saw what vehicle they got into. The cops came there and they're like, do you know somebody was skinned alive 2 days ago, three houses down? And I was like, I don't care. I was like, I'm still willing to sleep in this house. They are not taking this refrigerator because I didn't have the money to replace it.
Just call me Brittany Rambo.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm just kind of scared of guns because I'm never trained in them, but I was willing. It was a pink gun and we were going to protect the property. So
now, were you in there by yourself?
I had a friend with me, but it was a useless friend. This was not a, not a protective friend. So yeah, that was my first house by myself.
Wow. That's a little disheartening. I'm sure that was. How long did it take you to get it repaired and then get it back on the market? Did the sale go through?
Probably just a couple weeks. Nothing took me long because it's all I did. I just got it done. Good at project management too. So you have to be if you look like me. I had to be excellent. Nobody believed in me at all in that construction industry. I was the only that there. Ugh, that was the most annoying thing.
Where do you think you got this drive from? Was that from mom and dad?
No, I was not like this growing up. Zero. I was just a prankster and goofball of one of six kids. And I had nothing to do but prank my siblings and rescue animals. But it was meeting that little girl. She shifted everything in me. And I can't function without a higher purpose. I cannot. I'm not a driven person naturally, like at all. But when attached to that clarity of that higher purpose, and I know exactly why I'm doing it. It's not like a made up little dumb purpose I have, because I'm not going to fall for that. it's got to be real. It's got to be authentic. And I've got to feel so connected to it, especially like once you've dealt with suicidal ideation like that. In my experience, it never goes away. You just get better at having tools to defeat those lies that feel so much like a truth. And I'm being very open about that because people feel so much shame for having those thoughts. But my husband and I were very open about it because we're like, I was surprised when people don't have those thoughts. Like, you never thought that. What? And so anyway, flash forwards from this hurricane, because I got to tell you the story. It's too crazy. Right. And you may have heard a piece of it, but I'm sure it's wrong from Jeremy because I have the better version. So Island gets hurt by a hurricane. I spend a year learning how do you really get a nation back on its feet by interviewing everybody from the president of the country to the guy who created a bar under a boat that had washed up on shore, like entrepreneur. And so how do you really get a place back online? And so I'd spent a year doing this, and my roommate, I just had to live with this girl because honestly, it was part of my healing journey. She said, you need to go on a date so you can believe in love again. And I was like, fine. And so I found a guy who was my type enough, but just not serious. And he was so nice though. And so I was going down to, you know, a couple months in, I knew he wasn't the one, but we were going down to visit his family in Alabama and no, Mississippi. Anyway, I'm on my way through the airport. He was already down there. And this girl walks up to me after I realized the flight is 2 hours delayed. And she said, are you Brittany Turner? I was like, yeah. And she said, oh my gosh, I'm a huge fan. Can I ask you some questions? And I was like, sure. Signed up spending the next 2 hours with her. But she had this guy walk up and she goes, this is my boyfriend, Austin. He's like, what are you doing going to the Delta? He ends up being friends with the guy I was dating, childhood friends. And then this guy rolls up in a wheelchair. And they said, this is our friend, Jeremy Locke. He's a Green Beret. And I was like, oh, thank you for your service. And I was like, wounded warrior.
and he's so laughing the whole time.
Like, and he's like, thank you, ma'am. And so for the next 2 hours, I'm hanging out with her, answering her many questions about business, real estate, changing the world. And I'm just watching this guy to the corner of my eye, just roll around, hanging out with these old ladies, like, and his friends pushing him up a hill. And then at one point he's trying to do this wheelie. And he was so bad at it. And I was like, oh, he still has heart. Oh my gosh. And so he's trying to be a warrior. So we go to get on the plane. It's like a tiny retired jet. And I'm like, how's he going to make it up these stairs? And he gets out of the wheelchair. He gets wheeled all the way to the stairs to get on this like outdoor thing. And I was like, you can walk? And he said, yeah. And I was like, what? He said, yeah, we were just playing around. I was like, for 2 hours? So anyway, that was my first interaction. I go to get on the plane behind him, and there's only one open seat. It happened to be right in front of him. And so I was like, all right. So I'm sitting in front of him, and you know, I'm homeschooled. And so I was like, I'm never going to see this guy again. I'm going to ask him what I really think. And so I said, what are you doing? Why do you think you're on Earth? Was my first question to him. And he had a good answer. I can't remember it, but the next one was, why do you like doing what you do? Because he killed ISIS for a living. And he said, well, I like to make sure little girls don't get set on fire on their way to school. You know, I was like, wow. I said, wow, I bet it's really hard for you to date. And he said, what? Why would you say that? Why would you even say that? And I said, because you've seen things that actually matter. You probably don't have time or patience for dumb problems. And he just reached over and held my hands. And I was like, ah, I can't hold my hands. I'm on my way to see a different boyfriend. Again, I knew this guy wasn't forever, but it was still like, ah. And I said, you cannot hold my hands. And he said, I have to. And I was like, oh, this is the most romantic thing never happened to me.
Did you read this in a book?
I know. I let him hold my hands and I was guilty and sweat all over him and felt so bad, but at the same time, it was so cute. So we go to get off the plane and he asked me for my number. And I said, no, because I wasn't single. And then he said, well, let me put my number in your phone. So puts his number in my phone, Jeremy Locke from Oregon. And I never text him. We leave and I don't talk to this guy again. Long story short, my love language is physical touch with my person. And the guy I was dating just wouldn't hold my hand. I was like, hey, just so you know, it like means a lot to me. And then he started holding my hand less. And I was like, you know what? I don't care who you are. I am going to break up with you because, you know, I'm going to marry somebody who wants to hold my hand. And so I break up with him. And I was like, for the first time in my life, I'm going to go on a rebound date. And I was like, who wants to hold my hand? I was like, that guy from the plane. I tell this funny story because I am so planned. I am so organized. I have like my entire life tried to back it down from my eulogy and like, what's the best way we can get in alignment with what God put in our heart. But it's so funny how weird of a story it is that God put me and Jeremy together, because it was the most unplanned, silly thing I've done in my life, was to go on a date with this Green Beret. And so I texted him, hi, it's that girl you inappropriately held hands with about 8 months ago. And he's like, no freaking way. Takes me, asks me on a date. And I am just messing with this guy. Like, I told him my last name was Schlagenhammer, so he couldn't Google me. And like the minute before I walk up to him, I was like, oh, just so you know, I've gained 75 pounds since I've last seen you, in case you don't recognize me, but I wear it well. Like, just messing with this dude. I'm not planning on seeing him again. But Brittany Schlagenhammer went on a date with this guy. And at the end of it, it was an atrocious date, because he just drank a lot and I had not really ever drank before. And I was like, wow, I guess this is an army thing. So maybe. Yeah, I didn't know. I spent my whole life working and not having time to have a downer in my system. I'd just fall asleep if I ever had a drink. So I just didn't do it. But I was like, that was really fun. I'm never going to see him again. And anyway, he kept asking me on dates. And then there was this one week I said, no, I can't go out with you. But he knew the way to my heart was Indian food. And so he came up to the office and he said, what are you doing? It looks like you're mission planning. And I said, yeah, well, the Bahamas just got annihilated by Hurricane Dorian and I'm going to go down and help. And he's like, you can do that? I said, yeah, you can go help. So he ended up being able to get off work and came down as my security. And we were with a different group who were, like all these other groups, very ineffective. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I told you people aren't very good at this. And he about went crazy on day three. He took over the whole mission and he created a plan and he got the aid where it needed to do. And he created this grid. And I was like, whoa, first of all, this is very attractive. Secondly, where did you learn these skills? And he's like, this is army skills. And I was like, would your friends like to do this stuff? And he's like, yes, I think they'd really like it. And so what was a rebound date from this goofy guy that drank too much, and I was singing karaoke with him on Broadway just for fun as Brittany Schlagenhammer, became somebody that found his purpose on that trip. Like, we have a picture where he noticeably changed his smile. And really? I have it. And it's like one of our favorite things, because a different light came into this man's eyes. And we went back from that trip and we whiteboarded how you would plug veterans into the disaster space. And now, yes, flash forward, God has done so many miracles through this. And we went from like dreaming of being a for-profit to a nonprofit, and watching this man that I fell in love with, who was a barrel-chested freedom fighter, completely crazy, talented special forces guy, find his purpose, decide to leave the military, go through that experience, and believing him in himself as this amazing person, to in the retirement process being told, as part of their process, you know, what his disability was,
right?
What his traumatic brain injuries were, what his PTSD is, like all his ratings, and really believing these doctors and this identity of brokenness. And oh, by the way, if you don't take these pills, you're going to be a problem to society. Now, my gift in life is seeing that highest and best in everybody. And I watched this person with this incredible talent, just like Gavin, go from being a child rescuer to can barely function. Like, he was like talking to a dead robot, if that even means anything. And we have gone through we've gone through a lot. You know, there's trauma from childhood as a common denominator amongst many veterans. It's what drew them into wanting to be a protector in the first place. There's war trauma. There's physical damage. There's addiction. There's all kinds of things. And we have gone through it all. And as an entrepreneur, I said, if this is going to work for one person, these solutions, these healing methodologies of a warrior's way to heal, not this softy little kumbaya, you know, cucumbers on your eyes way to do something. But if these work on what I would call my toughest client, which is my husband, he's the toughest one because he just doesn't believe in these things. And he believed vulnerability is straight weakness, which is part of the programming. If it works on him, it'll work on somebody else. And so we created Heal the Heroes program out of that and in partnership with the doctor. And anyway, we made this program and it's not overly thought through. It wasn't like psychologists and all this different stuff. It was just what straight up works. And when these veterans, we use the island as the healing space for them to start their journey off with. These guys who come in just many with suicide plans.
Yeah.
And they know how to kill. Like they're trained in this. Like they have an active plan or they've attempted it before. In 5 days, we watch God meet them. I say sneak attack them because we're not slapping people up with the Bible. We're not preaching at all. We're just letting them feel that presence, that safety. And we have very real, raw conversations with people who have been through it before. And they're in that community. They're in that brotherhood again, or in that sisterhood again, because we have all female or all male platoons. We watch them find themselves, find their purpose. And they're able to break things off that they have struggled with for decades. And that's the beginning of them learning to, I have to heal myself so that I can not be carrying this darkness with me. And if I don't carry it with me, then I'm able to go in and out of the darkness and help other people out of it. And so it's the coolest concept ever that we did not have fully thought out when we first started this whole journey. It's just been like truly a walk of faith. But to say it succinctly, we repurpose veterans and first responders to go rescue kids. And we rescue people from disasters and trafficking. It's so awesome.
And that's, you know, Brittany, we've been going for well over an hour now. So what I'd like to do is call a stop to today. But everybody, you got to come back tomorrow because we're just getting into all of this is leading up to what's going on that island. You know, let me just ask you now, do you know anybody that's ever bought an island? I didn't until yesterday. I do now. But come on back with us tomorrow. Thank you so much for joining us here on Game Crimes. Brittany, thank you for your time today. And we look forward to finishing this up tomorrow.
Thanks
in the meantime, all you folks out there, God bless. Stay safe. We'll see you tomorrow.